So this is Orion, the hunter. I'm offering a picture with the imaginary lines that connect his form in case you're as clueless about constellations as I am. Orion is the only one that I know how to find in the sky, except for the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. And when the lines are drawn, you can see shoulders, arms, one of them's holding a bow. You can see this belt made of three bright stars and legs coming down. What isn't drawn, and if you can't see, feel free to shift. What isn't drawn with an imaginary line is this sword that Orion carries, right? This is what Orion looks like in the sky with no magnification. You see the belt? It's pretty recognizable once you know what you're looking for, which is why it's the only one I know. I look for it whenever I have the chance to in the night sky, and we live in a place where we do get the chance to see Orion whenever it's clear and not completely light polluted. There's something comforting to me about recognizing something in that vast, dark, unknown space, something I can name and see, and there's something metaphorical there that I'll touch on in just a minute. And here it is, just a little bit bigger, maybe not quite as bright. The belt and the shoulders up there and the sword really stand out. And that center star there and the sword is super bright. Last January, when I was in Arizona for a week, I visited Kitt Peak National Observatory for their nightly observing program. It takes almost a half hour to drive up the long, winding road about 7,000 feet up into the mountain that the observatory is on the top of. And once I was there, I got to learn a little bit about the observatory and their 24 telescopes. As the light started to fade, our guide took us to the west-facing side of the mountain to watch the most amazing sunset I have ever seen. And then we walked back to the visitor center, and we learned a little bit about the research that happens there while waiting for the darkness to arrive. And then our guide brought us out to one of the telescopes and trained it on a couple of the features of the night sky, and we got to step to the viewer for each one of them and look at them. The first one was the Andromeda Galaxy, the closest spiral galaxy to us, which I had heard of but didn't know how to find. This is more or less what I saw. Holy cow! It was amazing. I had seen pictures of this, but there it was, right in front of me. My heart sped up a little bit as I took in that I was actually seeing this galaxy that I had heard and trusted existed. But I was seeing it, and I felt both huge with the ability to have had my kin make this thing that made that possible, and infinitesimally small next to the hugeness and grandeur of what I was looking at. Then I had to let the next person take a turn. Our guide showed us four other things. Something called Almac, which is a double star. One of them is blue, and it actually was. The Eskimo Nebula, which is a dying star that's pushing out a cloud of gas. Most nebulas are actually places that stars are being created and gases are being moved. A close-up of Mars, and then this. Look familiar? Orion's belt, and below it, the sword. And through the telescope, I could see that this wasn't just a star. It's fuzzy and had a little bit of texture to it and a little bit of color to it. This view is pretty close to what we saw in the telescope. And that bright star in the center of the sword is actually a nebula. It's called the Orion Nebula. And here's a picture of it. Go ahead. Here's a picture of it taken through a much larger telescope at Kitt Peak that they weren't letting visitors look through. But just absolutely amazing. Do you know what's going on inside there? I know some of us do. What's going on inside there? There are clumps of hydrogen and other gases that are contracting under their own gravity. Right? Do I have that right? More or less? As the gas collapses, the clump in the center gets stronger. The gas heats up to crazy temperatures by converting potential energy in the gravity to thermal energy. It gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And if the temperature gets hot enough, nuclear fusion happens and forms a protostar, a baby star. And the protostar is born when it starts emitting enough radiative energy, like our sun, right? Radiative energy coming out and heat to balance out its gravity and stop that collapse. There are stars being born inside that nebula. This is a shot. None of these are shots I got to see, unfortunately, but these are all pictures within the Orion Nebula. So this is a shot of stars actually, some of the protostars actually showing up in that gaseous mix. And as that happens, there's these streams of charged particles called stellar winds that are being generated. And the winds hit the gases, and then they form these gas clouds that come up and rise around and move. It's crazy. One more. So eventually, like over another 100,000 years or so, the gases will be pushed out of the nebula completely, and there'll be a cluster of bright young stars surrounded by little wispy filaments of what's left of these clouds. So just for a little added awesomeness, there's a couple more images of this particular nebula. Amazing. And one more. That's the last one. That's the last one, Steve. Thank you. And then we went back outside, and they gave us binoculars. And the guide pointed out where in the sky the different things we had seen so big were. And I could see this little elongated smudge. Tiny little thing that I never would have noticed otherwise, that I now knew was the Andromeda Galaxy. And the tiny dot with diffuse edges that was the Eskimo Nebula, and Mars with its red tinge, so obvious. And then I looked at Orion, and there was that bright smudge in the middle of the sword that I now knew wasn't a star, but a nursery of more than 700 of them. And I saw a depth of field, kind of like this slide, that I hadn't noticed before. A three-dimensionality that reminded me how big and how far away that nebula is. I've always been fascinated with the night sky and the feeling that I get when I look at it. It's a combination of things, that feeling. There's an awareness of my own body as I breathe and my heart beats. And often it's cold when I'm looking at the sky because that's when the clearest time of year is. And I can feel all those things when I'm out there long enough to let myself quiet and kind of sink into looking out and up. There's sheer wonder at the beauty and at the expansiveness, and it is so vast and unknown that I feel tiny, like I said before, like a speck. And that feels lots of ways too, right? I feel completely insignificant in the hugeness of it all. And sometimes I feel just a little bit afraid. The bigness, when I let myself take that in, feels almost overwhelming. Because it is this time of year, I can talk about how I'm reminded a little bit of a part of the birth story of Jesus. The book of Luke tells it like this: in that region there were shepherds lying in the fields, keeping watch over their flocks by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people." Sometimes the glory, the wonder, is so very big that it's frightening. That hugeness that I can imagine the shepherds felt and that I feel can be overwhelming. And there's a fear that's intricately tied to the awe sense of taking it in. The angels announce themselves by saying, "Do not be afraid," because awe might lead us to seeing things differently, to growth, to big ideas, maybe even to change. Certainly, I can feel things shift inside me when I let myself take in that awe. And at the same time, as we've seen in two different ways already this morning, I know that I'm related to all of it, that I am stardust looking back upon the place from which I came, that all of the hydrogen that ever was and ever will be was born in the Big Bang, or the Great Radiance, as Connie Barlow calls it, and every single atom that exists in the universe today was born in those burning masses of stars that lived and died before our sun was born. Every single bit of me recycled stardust. And what's even more amazing is that I can know this. I love how Neil deGrasse Tyson did that. How I can know this, that I can look out into the night sky and know myself as fundamentally related to awe. I can trace my origins to the great radiance and find both wonder and meaning in that relatedness. I can recognize myself in the vastness, and so I'm at home in the universe, even when I am overwhelmed and afraid. And so even though I'm tiny and insignificant, I'm also part of that vastness, and it is part of me. Do not be afraid. For although the universe is wide and its processes are amazing and huge, and it's easy to feel lost, it's also possible to feel at home. For you're part of the mystery and wonder, just as I am, part of the great process of evolution that started 15 billion years ago with that great flaring forth. And you're part of the planet for which everything happened in a way that could support life, your life and the lives of your beloveds. And that is most certainly a miracle, no more and no less than the fact that you woke up this morning. May it be so. And may we be so.